find like the happily ever after. You're the fairy tale. You're the Cinderella. You're the, you know, every girl or man who wanted to get married and has the dream of having the white picket fence in the family. You're the instrumentality to do that. I, on the other hand, am in the instrumentality of destruction of marriage. And so I used to tell my kids, you know, what does mommy do for a living? And they're like, well, mommy is a judge. I'm like, no. Mommy figures out every day who is lying and who isn't. And I've gotten pretty good at it.
My daughter's 4 and she knows what I do is mommy helps people find love. And also we're a company of 2 women and have gotten really good at like, okay, well, a guy's saying this, but also he's saying this to 2 women. What does he really mean? What would he say if he were talking to 2 dudes, right? I just find that people with online dating, there's so many potentially amazing matches overlooked because people are so physically driven. What's your relationship status now?
Single.
So yeah, I mean, are you down? I genuinely can turn this into a like let's learn about Jake session.
We are.
Maybe people screw can write into yeah, get that script out the window. We could do a little intake interview with you.
Yes, right
and
now.
Then listeners, if they're interested, can go to my website or DM me, like somehow contact me and I'll vet people for you.
Yes, we're doing that right now. We're completely going left and doing it. Sorry, Jake.
It's
You're
all
so
these
good
things.
At deflecting. We're going to get back to asking questions about Jake.
Oh, yeah. He's not getting out of this.
Oh, no. He's not getting out of this. Nope. Never been arrested. Never had a protective order filed against him. Like, no criminal background of any kind. He's not going to be in any database or anything else. Like, we're clean on that front.
Do we want to start with the porn style sex first?
Yeah. My perspective is if it is like earth-shattering sex. You've never had sex this good in your life. It is like swinging from the chandelier, like this person was a gymnast in a former life. Like, it's porn-style sex. Run.
So bad sex equals good relationship. Got it, Michelle. Very well. If you're thinking lawyer, you're thinking fun. Let's be honest. Like, divorce attorney, you're thinking, like, where's the ball at? Let me get 2 tickets to that one.
He is very private with his dating.
Sorry. Used to be.
Oh my God, I just forgot where I'm at here.
Passionate, emotionally available, non-racist. I'm on it.
This is the one time when you can be on a podcast where you have JD who's going to get you going in and Michelle who's going to get you going out as a lawyer. So it's great to have this balance here. So I know like JD, you're going to say, here's all these candidates. And Michelle's going, not so fast.
Sometimes breaking the rules works, guys. All right, Jake, I'm going to do the... intro.
Only if you want a complete podcast. Sorry, JD. I keep Michelle in line because obviously you see what's going on here.
Jake and I, for lack of a better word, dick around a lot.
I love it. I feel like that's why people like listening to you.
Probably.
See, Michelle, we have somebody who's highly more skilled in comic timing than us. So,
who?
JD.
Oh, yeah. Well, I suck at comedic timing.
I'm not funny in person. I should warn you. Like,
well, we're not in person, are we?
My humor's on paper.
The transcript will be hilarious for the show. The video, not so much. Sorry.
Good. As long as we prepare people.
Exactly.
There you go. The information shared in this podcast is intended for entertainment purposes only. It should not be considered as professional legal advice or a substitute for seeking professional legal advice. I'm Michelle Locke, and this is Love, Lust, Law. Today's guest has spent her career crafting stories. First for television, writing on hit shows from The Family Guy to Salem. I love Salem, by the way. And now in real life, helping Hollywood singles find lasting love. JD Samuels Kuba is the founder of LJ Matchmaking, the elite matchmaking and coaching service known for pairing entertainment industry professionals in meaningful, grounded relationships. Alongside her business partner, she's become one of Hollywood's go-to love agents. But her favorite love story may be her own. After unsuccessfully setting up a client named Dave 5 different times, Chitty decided to break her own rules and ask him out herself. Sometimes breaking the rules works, guys. What Dave jokingly calls getting high our own supply. Today, the two are married, proud parents to their daughter, Rocky, and co-hosts of the podcast Match Made in Hollywood. JD is also a certified date and relationship coach and the author of a memoir, Meets Dating Guide, Your Last First Date. In this episode, we're diving into modern love. Oh, hold on to your seats, ladies and gentlemen. Hollywood dating disasters and what people are getting wrong about relationships and the surprising lessons JD has learned from setting up dozens of couples, including herself. Please welcome JD Samuels Kuba.
Yay! Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I actually think this is the first podcast I've been on where the person reading any version of my bio has mentioned the love of Salem. So like really? Usually, yeah, it's really exciting. I feel like I don't encounter that many people who have watched it. I absolutely loved working on it. So it's always dark. Nice to hear.
It is. Oh yeah, it's really dark, dark. So that maybe tell you a little bit about me.
It's a little different than Family Guy.
Yeah, opposite end of the spectrum for multiple reasons. But I do love Salem. It is so dark, but a little bit of my story, anything that has witches, demons, werewolves, I'm into, which makes me a complete goober. I understand that. And I own my own dorkness. I'm fine with it. But another secret, I've watched Supernatural. There's 15 seasons. I refused to watch the last season because I didn't want to see one of them die. But I've watched 14 of those seasons probably 7 times through. And if anyone knows that show, there's like 21 episodes and they're 48 minutes long a piece, more or less. And I've watched it all the way through. That's part of my ADHD. I have to watch the same thing over and over again. I've watched Salem a couple times through as well.
Well, that is a big commitment regarding Supernatural. And I'm excited we could be goobers together.
Well, this is how much of a goober I am. My law office used to be on Congress Avenue in downtown Austin. And so one of my law partner's offices, the backdrop was the Capitol, like the actual like Texas Capitol, the most beautiful view in the office. And Jared Padalecki filmed the last episode of the first season of Texas Walker Ranger in my law partner's office. We had just moved out of the office right around COVID time. And we have this blue in our office called Van Dusen blue. It's a very distinct blue and that's our firm colors. Anyways, and so you see this Van Dusen blue office that was Brad's office and then the Texas Capitol. I'm like, I've been in that office. I'm like, that used to be my law office. Anyway, so that's my one only bit of information.
Can we
I feel like you have to have Jared on the podcast.
Is it Texas Walker Ranger? Did I say it wrong?
Yes, I apologize, JD. I interrupted you and Michelle. I just wanted to correct it for all the people that will jump down your throat and leave you nasty comments.
What did I say it was?
It's Walker Texas Ranger, not Texas. I mean, you could do a Texas Walker Ranger, but I would say Walker Texas Ranger just to be on the safe side.
So okay,
just
Walker say that. Texas Ranger, but we can get the wrong one in there first too, because just so you know, JD, I get names wrong all the time. Like, for example, I called Ed Bundy Ted Bundy from Married with Children. Was it? All in the Family, Archie Bunker?
You said Eddie Bunker.
Bunker. It was Archie Bunker.
Yeah, that's
Bunker.
His cousin who owns the gas station down the street, but he was never made an appearance on the show, apparently.
All the time.
Those two are a little more closely related.
Right.
But Jake also is notorious for misspeaking words. So, for example, I keep a running list of Jake's faux pas in speaking. And he was trying to say once, California civil statutes. It came out civivora. How he gets civivora from California civil statutes, I don't know. But we have now turned civivora into an entirely inside joke. And we refer to it basically and treat it as an STD. And then we use Jake's other oops instead of saying SPF. He said SPV, and so now SPV is the treatment for civivora.
So basically, no one will say you two don't have fun on here.
No, that's no, well. We have fun. If you're thinking lawyer, you're thinking fun. Let's be honest. Like divorce attorney, you're thinking like, where's the ball at? Let me get 2 tickets to that one. All right.
If you're describing any previous relationships I've had with lawyers, but.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, Jake, that people do not think divorce lawyer and funny, divorce lawyer and fun, or divorce lawyer and nice.
Okay. But I have to tell you, like, having been in different sets of writers' rooms, people assume the comedy writers are the funny ones and the drama writers are not as funny.
No.
But I have to tell you, in their day-to-day lives, just as a general description of these people, comedy writers are very dark. And drama writers, because you're kind of writing about serial killers and witches all day, they're pretty light. Like they're getting all the darkness out in their writing. So their day-to-day lives are actually pretty wonderful. So for those out there listening, I would say if you've ever considered dating a TV writer, probably go for the drama ones.
You know, that's my same philosophy on stand-up comedians, because the ones that are so, so funny have like the darkest past, and that's what makes them so funny. And so, yeah, I think the same holds true for like stand-up comedians. Like the ones that I know that are funny have some dark stuff behind those closed doors. I look at the people that I've analyzed, right? So I did over 5,000 cases. And if you think about that, that is at least two attorneys, two parties. So it's a minimum of four people for each case, at a minimum. That doesn't include witnesses, et cetera. So you multiply that by 5,000 people, that's a lot. And so I used to tell my kids, you know, what does mommy do for a living? And they're like, well, mommy is a judge. I'm like, no. Mommy figures out every day who is lying and who isn't. And I've gotten pretty good at it. And so that kind of carries over into what I do now, because I cross-examine people. So I've got a pretty good feel for when someone's lying on the witness stand. Like you can just figure it out. So I say that to say this. I saw Seth on Graham Norton with Tom Cruise. And what was interesting about that, for a couple of things, because you pay attention to people's reactions, their demeanor. Like there's so much unsaid that you can get from a scene as opposed to what is actually said. And I don't think it's very often that Tom Cruise is impressed with people because he's Tom Cruise. And you could see Seth going in and out of all these characters, like at a drop of a hat, drop of a hat, drop of a hat. And you could see Tom staring at him, blown away. Like you could see on Tom's face that it was like, holy, like, I mean, it was admiration, awe, couldn't believe it, right? And it was written all over his face. I mean, it literally, if it could have dropped, like closed his mouth, you could have. But you could also see what I thought was interesting was, from my perspective, I could be totally wrong, the uncomfort level that Seth had sitting on that stage with those individuals. I think he was completely uncomfortable sitting next to Tom Cruise. And I think when he was in the characters, it was easier for him to manage it than to just being himself sitting there next to Tom Cruise. Anyways, so this whole interaction I was watching, not from like what they were saying, but I was like, just not the words, but everything else about that scene just to me was like, wow.
I mean, you're very good at reading people. I can't speak to that specific set of circumstances because I wasn't on his team at the time.
Right.
But I'm excited for this podcast, knowing how good you are at reading people. You'll have to tell us listeners if you think that I'm lying at all.
Wow.
But something that I think is really cool is when you talk about the number of cases and how how you've described it to your kids. Like it's, my daughter's four and she knows what I do is mommy helps people find love. But the sheer number of people that I've come across that I've helped set up, and the number of people involved in those setups, whether it's my partner who helps me match the people, both people sitting on the other side of the dinner table from each other, unpacking all of the feedback, working with, maybe collaborating on a match with another matchmaking company. It's very similar, just like in the sheer volume of learning people, like the data that we have to go by. So we've had very different backgrounds that have gotten us to where we are, but I feel like in a weird way, have really gotten to know people as a result of these various paths. So
yeah, you couldn't be good at what you do unless you're able to identify the intangibles, right? It's the whether he or she is going to drive the other person nuts because of one of their particular idiosyncrasies, right? That no one talks about. But when you meet them, you notice they've got a twitch that happens every time they look up or down or sideways, right? Like, is that going to bother the other person? And those are what you have to look at to figure out, is this match going to work or not, right? Because if you're not a successful matchmaker, you're not going to make any money doing it.
And also we're a company of two women and have gotten really good at like, okay, well, a guy's saying this, but also he's saying this to two women. What does he really mean? What would he say if he were talking to two dudes, right? So there's just a lot of reading between the lines. There's a lot of reading into someone's feedback on somebody else, what they say they're looking for because they want to come off a certain way, but what are they really looking for? But I feel like because of what you've done, in a way, there's sort of needs to be like a more cynical approach taken to humanity to some extent. And I feel like I come at it from the angle of like, I want everyone to find love. Everyone's amazing. Like
you find like the happily ever after. You're the fairy tale. You're the Cinderella. You're the, you know, every girl or man who wanted to get married and has the dream of having the white picket fence in the family. You're the instrumentality to do that. I, on the other hand, am in the instrumentality of destruction of marriage.
Fascinating to, but I feel like there's more commonalities. I mean, we'll find out as we talk, right. But my hunch is there's more commonalities than there are differences despite that. And so it's just fascinating.
Oh, I agree. But here's my question. How do you go from where you were at to writing like one of the episodes for Family Guy to matchmaking? Because those don't really seem to be on the same path.
Yeah, everyone's very confused by my journey. But the truth is, kind of in the vein of what we've been talking about, everything comes down to having an interest in people. In my case, really just loving people and wanting to see the best in humanity, knowing what makes people tick, wanting to help them figure out, you know, their direction in life and how to achieve their dreams and all of that. And so I feel like the way that I've crafted character comes from my interest in people. You know, I was a screenwriting major at USC. My interest in crafting character stems from my interest in people. And I think that there's a lot of connective tissue. Once you know what makes somebody tick, writing sort of the background of a character, like where they come from, what socioeconomic background are they from? What was their upbringing like? What do they want to achieve in life? What are they looking for in a partner? When you know all of those things, you can craft an amazing character. You can help someone find their husband or wife. Like it's really not that different.
You know, I've always thought that I was a really good matchmaker only because I'm really good at seeing what doesn't work. So I'm pretty good at seeing what does work in relationships. But what's the one of the biggest secrets, like without giving away the book, like what can you tell our listeners? Like, here's one.
I mean, I think people are really intimidated in general by public figures and don't think to approach them, DM them, like think they're unworthy for a variety of reasons. And really, like, it's so cheesy to say, but the truth is, like, they're just like us. They're looking for the same things. And in some ways, it's even harder for them to date because of the public nature of it all. And so I think, you know, another secret maybe is that I do think, and maybe this is more venting than sharing a secret, I think there's so many people these days that are just eating up relationship advice from all the wrong sources. Oh, yes. Like the influencers out there who are single and they're talking about their dating lives and like, trust me, I'm dating a million people, like do what I'm doing, rather than turning to those that do it for a living, people that are happily married. You know, that's not to say there aren't amazing relationship coaches and dating coaches and matchmakers who are single. I know some of them and they're fantastic, but I just see like this general trend of eating up advice from public figures and influencers and sources that are of like the Hollywood variety that, you know, I would say like the secret there is actually like maybe don't do what they do. But I think when it comes to dating as a whole, what I really tried to do in the book is show the relatability of their journeys and to show how identifiable a lot of those situations and circumstances are. So yeah, you'll have to read my book for the specifics, but it's less of a like tell all and more of a, as you described it at up top, like a memoir about my own dating journey and meeting my husband who was a client initially, but setting up people in the entertainment world who go through the same struggles as you. So it's called Your Last First Date, Secrets from a Hollywood Matchmaker.
So I'm going to say interesting because Jake and I, you and I have talked about this on the flip side. Some of our early episodes of our podcast was us covering Hollywood divorces. And the reason I did so was similar to why you wrote your book, is that in a courtroom, it doesn't matter who they are. Doesn't matter how many movies they've been in. Doesn't matter how many TV shows they've been in. Doesn't matter how famous they are. Because the procedures is still the same to get divorced and unhitched for everyone else. And so it provides some insight to show they really are just regular people. So what a great book to show that just, you know, they're people too. They just have, they serve a different role than the rest of us.
Yeah. So I run a blind dating service. Yeah, no, I just don't exchange photos. And so I think it's interesting to, you know, as to the why, but I just find that people with online dating, there's so many potentially amazing matches overlooked because people are so physically driven. And I think that chemistry is huge. It's really important. In fact, it's essential in establishing, you know, whoever you're going to spend the rest of your life with, you want to enjoy looking at them, right? And you want to have good chemistry. So I don't begrudge people that in a partner. I just don't think it's the only thing. And I think that when you're out and about in the real world, when you're swiping online, you know, people tend to really go for that primarily. And so I want to keep that in the mix. I just don't want it to be the only thing. And I think people present in person very different than the way they photograph. Sometimes there's a lot of catfishing now. Photos are overly filtered. AI is involved. So it's like, I'm just going to meet you. I'm going to get a sense of what you're open to physically.
When talking about dating and the epic failures of dating, because I was telling Jake earlier, he knows this. The last time I dated was 1999. Okay. When I was dating, we still had the, wait for it, Craigslist back pages. AOL.
I remember those. Yep.
AOL chats. And then we had Yahoo Instant Messenger. And what were you using? Was it Yahoo Dating too?
There was an era in the late 90s where the back page of LA Weekly would have these voice mailboxes. So you call, this was before internet dating was anything. So you'd call in, hey, I'm Jake or whatever. I'm 21, single, just moved out from St. Louis. This is actually my message. Then it was like, then people would listen to messages and then reply to the box. And then you'd end up getting the phone number. It was really primitive. But I remember because I moved out to LA with my ex-girlfriend. We had broken up before we moved out here right after college. And bad idea to move in with your ex-girlfriend, you know, and regardless. But we did. And I would mock her for saying, oh, that's ridiculous. How pathetic, how lonely, how morally reprehensible this is. And then, of course, a month later, I'm like, I'm pretty lonely. I'm going to try this out. So I ended up putting my foot in my mouth and tried it. And I ended up going on a couple of dates. It was really interesting, though, at the time. It was more of a sociology experiment. But I ended up getting into an 8.5-year relationship after that, a woman I met at work. So I never went back to the telepersonals. And I think they canceled them in, you know, 2002 or something like that after internet dating took off. So,
well, wait a minute. Oh, sorry.
What's my sign? Ahead. Virgo.
What's your relationship status now?
Single. I've been through long-term relationships, short-term relationships.
And where are you based?
Los Angeles, Hollywood.
Okay. So what we should do, Jake, aside from you being in my database as soon as possible, we should do a little, like, tell us about Jake today. And then
you know what?
Maybe people screw can write into get that script out the window. We could do a little intake interview with you
right now.
And then listeners, if they're interested, can go to my website or DM me, like somehow contact me, and I'll vet people for you.
Yes, we're doing that right now. We're completely going left and doing it. Sorry, Jake.
Michelle, you're technically the host of this podcast, so I don't want to intrude on your time here. I don't know if this is a great idea, ladies. Nope. I don't
this
know.
Is
if
this is a fabulous effing idea.
I mean, people listening are already familiar with you. Maybe they're very excited about hearing the fact that you are now an eligible gentleman. Yeah.
Well, possibly, and Jake in their has vicinity. A philosophy of don't crap
don't
where you
eat. Don't shit, don't shit where you eat. I'll say it.
Yeah. Okay.
But I'm not eating here. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not.
There's no lunches here, no dinners here, and no breakfast here.
There's no free lunch, Michelle. But JD, it's interesting too, because, you know, when you put together dating, I hate to say it, like, it's like going to battle in a way. You pack up your supplies, you get out there, you trudge. It's physical, it's moral, it's ethical, it's emotional, it's financial. It's You're all so these good things.
At deflecting. We're going to get back to asking questions about Jake.
Oh, yeah. He's not getting out of this.
Oh, no. He's not getting out of this. Nope. Yeah. You can keep trying, Jake. Watch what happens.
I'm not going to deflect. There's a term that I want to use that I don't know if I made it up, but what I consider like a qualified dater. The reason I'm bringing up the qualified dater thing is that you go through different...
avoid it being about you? Uh-huh.
Well, no, you go through different eras in life. You know what I'm saying? You go through ups and downs and sort of like this. And the reason I'm bringing up all these sort of factors and sectors is that you have this idealized version of who you are out there, right? And I'm not a serial dater per se. I'm not on any dating apps right now, currently. But the reason I'm saying this is that I've gone through different eras in my life where... You know, and Michelle knows this too. She's claimed I'm slow as a snail when it comes to.
No, I said you. So I'm going to give JD the rundown on you. So you be quiet for 2 seconds. And I'm going to give JD the Michelle Locke analysis of Jake Deptula.
Also, by the way, I should not presume sexual orientation.
No, well, no, that's.
But you presume correctly.
Okay.
Let's start with the facts. Jake is one of the most caring, compassionate people I know. He is very much in touch with the emotional range and very high EQ, very high EQ. He respects women. He was raised, he's got 3 younger sisters. Like he was in a very female-oriented household. It was he and his dad were the lone Y chromosomes. But his sister's mother, there was never any emasculation of the men in the household. Everyone was treated with respect. Jake treats everyone in his life with respect. He also puts victims and survivors oftentimes ahead of his own interests. He's also put girlfriends ahead of his own interests. And he's allowed girlfriends in some certain circumstances to take advantage of him. And I am very protective of Jake, and someone comes and messes with him, they're going to have to tangle with me now, and they're not going to like that. That being said, he is funny. He's extremely intelligent. He's also a master strategist. And I say that being a strategist myself, at least when it comes to what I do for a living, because he's even strategized for me without me even knowing for about a year that's what he was doing, which still makes me kind of cranky. His biggest flaw, in my opinion, is he overanalyzes everything to death and has a really difficult time making a decision. I think that's Jake in a nutshell.
So my question is this whole diatribe leading up to whether or not I can ask you questions or not, Jake, is the resistance that you are not sure you're struggling with, do I bring enough to the table, right, to be worthy of being matched? Or are you like, I'm not in a place to be dating because I'm sowing my seed and I'm just not ready to settle down yet. Like, is the resistance coming from either of those places?
Those are great questions. And I think that number one, I'm way too old to be sowing my seed still.
Are we allowed to see you without your hat?
He's got a full head of hair.
My hair is like a mess, but it's...
Why are you wearing a hat? Full head of hair. Oh, you show off that hair. Why are you covering it up?
I'm telling you,
the ladies get suspicious. You look so much younger. My husband has the same thing, though. Like, he does not... He's 47. He does not look 47. So I'm going to choose to believe you, but you do not... Ladies, he looks a lot younger. So.
Oh, no. Like, and even in person, because I'm 49, right, Jake? And he attracts younger women because he looks so much younger. I'm trying to find, Jake, your freshman picture in high school.
Well, so let's dive in.
Yes, let's dive in.
Are you looking for your wife?
Always. That's never okay. A pause in that context. And if you want me to answer the question one by one as you sort of rattle them off, I can do that, or I can give you more context. But as Michelle said, I overanalyze a lot. I think your first question, I think there's always a concern that you have an idealized version of yourself of what you want to bring to the table. And Michelle has really listed off a lot of my good qualities. One of the problems that I've had is, and this is an unfortunate thing, and I hate to say it like this, and it's not just from women in my life, but not valuing myself enough and being taken advantage of in many ways. When I say advantage, a lot of it has to do with the sweat equity that I put into things like projects and things like that, like based on from a financial standpoint. I'll tend to put a lot into people and time without asking for anything back. And it's also impacted other things. Like I'll help people a lot and not take care of my own needs in the process. So it's kind of put me sadly at a disadvantage a bit from where I should be in my idealized life for what I want for myself and what I would want for a partner. But at the same point, this year has kind of shifted that going this way. So I've actually sort of been more in touch with myself, as I said before, emotionally, physically, spiritually, financially, everything in that context, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
it does. I mean, I think realistically, if you wait until you're completely the idealized version of, or the ideal version of yourself, yeah, you're going to end up alone your entire life.
It'll be like this underground.
Exactly. Like you want to find someone that you can grow with and someone who's going to be understanding and supportive of your journey and hopefully vice versa. And so there's some matchmakers and dating coaches where you come to them, you've seen it on TV, I'm sure, like, okay, so this is what so-and-so is looking for. This is how I want you to change your hair and your wardrobe. I don't do any of that. I take people as they are, where they're currently at in their life and what they're looking for. And I match them with someone who is well-suited for their present and future. And so there's nothing that you have to be self-conscious of. I think Michelle described you as the ideal type of person that enjoy matching because you seem like a good guy.
Oh, thank you.
I'm pretty blunt. He is genuinely an amazing person. And any woman would be lucky to have him as a life partner. He really is salt of the earth and one of the true gems that we're not fortunate enough to see anymore, or at least not enough of. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart, Jake.
I get that. I mean, through the computer screen, I'm getting those vibes. So, yeah. I mean, are you down? I genuinely can turn this into a like, let's learn about Jake session.
We are.
I'm an open book, so go ahead and pitch away. Because again, I have ultimate edit control over this episode, so I think we're all right.
I'm gonna take away.
No. But yeah, please. I'm gonna be the experiment for you ladies, and I think that because we have a professional matchmaker here and someone who's found people love.
Oh, I love this.
It is something we need to get into. I think we all have to take some risks, and I'm willing to go without a net here.
In the 2.5 years now that I've known Jake, almost 3, I've never seen him have the wow with someone. I mean, he's gone on dates and had a couple, I think, short-term relationships, but he didn't have the wow.
Also, I'm very private with my dating.
He is very private with his dating.
Sorry. Used to be.
Oh my God. I just forgot where I'm at here. Sorry.
This is the 2026 telemessage for you, right?
This ain't no LA Weekly here, JD. This is a real deal.
It's not the Craigslist back pages.
Well, I'm curious also, because these days people are so skeptical. Like, okay, he says he's a good guy. His friend says he's a good guy. I want to take sort of the legal approach to proving that you're a good guy. So, when I'm walking clients through their online dating profiles, I will not allow them to just write like, oh, I'm kind. Oh, I'm, I'm nice, I'm thoughtful, I'm family oriented. Mm-hmm. If you were proving that case right now, like if you were crafting your online dating profile right now, what's the evidence that you would present to Michelle and I to say like, okay, I am a good person? Can you give like 3 different examples in your life that showcase that maybe you would put in an online dating profile?
I would say this, and this is one of those tricky parts, is that the best of what I do is the impact that I have on other people's lives and what they would openly share about me. And being able to see what kind of impact I'm able to make by working with other people, by helping other people, and kind of being there when they need me to be in terms of dependability, in terms of not judging them, in terms of being someone who is open to not only hearing and listening, but learning at the same time, and not being someone who is this domineering sort of male person in a very female-based industry that we work in podcasting, because it primarily is in that capacity, especially in the true crime world, that I'm able to just be there and just listen and be able to support that way. And I think my work in many ways, my advocacy work, speaks for that. So that's probably the first thing that I would say. I think the second thing is going back to how I treat people in that capacity. Like, you could probably survey many coffee houses and restaurants in the area, not just based on tips, but also based on respecting people, no matter what they're doing, whatever walks of life they're in, is just treating everyone like a decent human and not taking anything for granted in that way, that capacity. I think three is that putting myself in a position to want to grow and to want to be a better person constantly and never settle with the status quo of what people expect from me, but try to overcome that in a capacity that keeps me hungry and that keeps me desiring passion to want to better myself in that way, for myself and also a potential partner in that capacity.
I'm going to add a couple things. That's the lawyer in me. Never been arrested, never had a protective order filed against him, like no criminal background of any kind. He's not going to be in any database or anything else. Like, we're clean on that front. The other thing I will say.
No bankruptcies.
No bankruptcies, correct. Is the other thing I will tell about Jake is you can tell by, like, the proof is in the pudding. You can tell he's a good guy. And I think Jake said it with many more words than I ever would have used, because he's really good at that. But it comes down to, you can tell he's a good guy because of what he does each and every day. That is how you know, one, two, or three, why he's a good guy. It's each and every single day he is out there doing something for someone else. If that doesn't show you what someone's character is, then I don't know what the heck will. That's the bottom line with Jake.
I'm sold. I think case proven. And so we do kind of the, you know, deeper conversations now, and then you fill out maybe an intake for me at a future date.
Send me the intake. I'll fill it out and send it back to you.
You know what? Yeah. She's my lawyer too, so that'll work out great. And no conflict of interest here, JD. I'm 5'8", by the way. I'll get that out of the way.
Are you a true 5'8"? My husband says he's 5'9". He's like 5'8¾". So
he's a true 5'8".
True, you know, 5'8".
I was. I've been measuring a bit, so I'm. You know, the older you get, the smaller.
He's slightly taller than me, and I'm 5'7".
Do you typically? What is the age range? If a woman is listening, and there's going to be what you say now, and there's going to be like the, but what are you really open to? Let's just cut to the, what are you really open to? Yeah, age range.
Let me be truthful with you on this, okay? I've dated younger and I've dated older. I tend to have more in common with older women, to be fair, like a little bit, maybe younger than me, but also older. My last girlfriend, I wasn't pursuing it in this context. She thought I was actually a lot younger when we first started dating. Somehow we hit that sweet spot, right?
Married that. I was 23 husband, who was 45.
Hey.
Yeah, I dated that too, although in my case was not the best idea. But.
No, and you, let's be fair, okay? You look at this from the perspective, and this is why I'm over analytical, and this is why I kind of try to throw a lot of things at you, JD, before I get to this point. Because as you get older, this stuff matters, okay? When you have somebody who's in their 50s and somebody, God forbid, they're in their 70s and they need doctor's appointments and special care. And I mean, I'm just, because I've seen enough people in my family now at this age to understand this is the kind of shit that happens. If you have a partner that's 10, 15, 20 years in either direction, it's going to be an inconvenience on someone, no matter what they say. I don't care if there's love involved. I don't care if anything. Obviously, financially can help that if you can get assisted caregiving. But I'm just saying that that's a reality. And I think a lot of people don't think about that, especially younger people going in when they, you know, have that huge age gap. And I'm not saying it can't work. I'm not saying, but I think for me, I need to skew older. I think that's more important for me.
I told you needed to skew older.
I'm not going to push back on that either. I usually... with my male clients in particular, we have a much more in-depth conversation about age.
The one interesting thing about age, and this is what I even tell, because When we do divorces, we sit in mediation. We get the divorces mostly done in mediation. And I've got lots of male clients. And so inevitably, we end up talking about dating advice. And I tell them a couple of things. I'm like, one, stop dating the younger ones because they're not going to provide you what you need long term. And the other answer I always tell them is find someone, and JD, you can tell me this is good advice or bad advice, but I said, find someone that has as much to lose in life as you do. Because if they don't, if they're not the similar socioeconomic, similar like professionalism, like professional licenses and other things, like you need to find someone that's more on your level, you know, like, because it just works better. Because how do you come home at the end of the day and have a conversation with someone that truly does not understand anything about the world you live every day at work? I'm gonna throw in, Jake's also is not, like, kids would be okay for him. Like, he'd be okay having children. Like, he's 100%. Never had okay. children. And so that, I want to make sure that we get, you know.
If
But not something you have a burning desire for.
Well, I think I would really embrace being a father, to be fair. I think I have a very paternal instinct, meaning if kids were born in the equation, I'd absolutely embrace that on an emotional level. From a value standpoint in a relationship, I am probably one of the most ultimate communicator men that I've been told by any woman I've either dated or have been friends with. So I think that in that capacity, I do know that I do bring that as a major value to the table. And I think even with when children are involved, that even extends to that. So I'd be open for adoption, a step type children situation or biological. So I would definitely be open to that. But to your point, there's no vilification or there's no massive sea of disappointment if that does not happen, if that makes sense.
Remember when I said he was a great guy? Just a great guy.
You just sent me the script. She texted me what to say.
Oh, there you go.
Say this, say that. Don't blow this.
Good job, Michelle.
Hey, fucker, don't blow this. I don't know what that means.
Hey, fucker, don't blow this.
So, but you are, let's say a woman is 32, like your ex. Like, if she has a burning desire to have kids, keep you in the mix for someone like that too.
You know, I feel that's a bit young for me now after going through it.
No, this is music to listeners' ears, I promise you. And to be with a partner who would try to have kids, and mm-hmm. if it happens, amazing. And if not, it's not like, oh, I don't want to be with her anymore because I have this burning desire to have children. It's like so comforting for someone at that age to have a partner with your outlook on kids. And so I'm not saying that I personally would only set you up with women in that age range, but just statistically, I feel like you're automatically extremely desirable in what you were talking about earlier about that balance of like, this one brings this to the table, this one brings that, and it can outweigh something that the other person is lacking. I do think any insecurities you might have in other aspects of your life, that's an area where you could provide someone a lot of emotional comfort and safety that balances some of that out. I'm down to move on to another line of questioning because I feel like I'm supportive of you on that journey. So from an age range perspective, because half of what I do is I try to kind of deliver to people what they're asking for, right? But the other half is who's actively looking for you back. And I can tell you statistically, in terms of age, the woman that is most like the woman where you would most likely be like the most desirable to them, strictly based on age and what you're open to with children, is the woman who is in her like early to mid 40s, where mm-hmm. she always really wanted children, is coming to the realization that it might not be in the cards for her. To me, Case has been proven as like, you are a catch. I can't wait for the right person to be put in front of you, but for them to be the right fit for you, in terms of the way to your heart, and you know, people give and receive love in different ways. I don't know if you know about like different love languages and all of that. Are you someone where you feel more adored by someone doing an act of service? Is it words? Is it giving you a thoughtful gift? Is it an experience, physical touch? Like, what gets what gets you going? What makes you feel thought of?
It is going to sound ridiculous.
He and I have discussed this before.
We have. Michelle's was words of defamation, but that's changed now. it's now words of affirmation. It's acts of correct. Service. It's gifts. Correct. It's physical touch and quality time. So I do know my love languages.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. But the reason I say this is that there's the outgoing love language and the incoming love language.
Yeah, I'm
right?
talking in incoming.
Oh, how incoming.
Do you
okay.
How do you receive it?
Quality time, physical touch would probably be my number one and two in whatever order you want to put that in. I okay. think outwardly, real quick, I would say that kindness goes a long way. So to see somebody doing acts of service, because I'm also very good at words of affirmation, delivering those to people. Like yes, it's between, well, it's between praise and support. I will support quite a few people. But the praise is very limited. Michelle, you get praise limited like Pavlov's dog. Like you have to, I have to ration it because your ego is bigger than we have time to discuss. But just a little bit, just a little bit. But you're a high-powered lawyer in Austin. What can I say? Very lucky. We're, JD and I are very lucky to be here. We know this. We're shivering with.
Oh my God. Next. Can we move on?
Okay, sorry.
For
see,
love
see
of
now
God.
Michelle's embarrassed. See, no more embarrassing me. Now it's Michelle. But the reason I say this real quick is that so for love language, probably physical touch and quality time, but doesn't mean I wouldn't embrace it. Gifts is probably my least. I don't need gifts. I really
knowing the physical. Yeah. So like knowing the physical touch component, do you find that women who are flirtier on a first date, do you find it easier to connect with them?
This is going to sound weird, but not necessarily because I haven't earned mm-hmm. it. I do like the chase. I don't want things to just be easy and come to me. I want to be able to like, well, let me see if they're interested in me and I'm interested in them and get to sort of the interplay between that. But
part
I,
of it, he wants to be in his masculine role a little bit.
Yes.
I know for most of my male clients, I'm like, don't. If And I also tell them if it's porn style sex, run. That's a red flag.
I didn't understand that context. I understand porn. I understand porn style sex, but how, meaning that somebody chasing porn style sex, tell me, I don't understand.
From my perspective, if it is like earth shattering sex, you've never had sex this good in your life. It is like swinging from the chandelier. Like this person was a gymnast in a former life. Like it's mm-hmm. porn style sex. Run.
And what's the reason for running?
Because usually that means a person's got mental health issues.
So bad sex equals good relationship. Got it, Michelle.
No. Hey, listen, I see the breakup side. I see the breakup side. And I ask them, I'm like, tell me this. What? How was the stuff? They're like, oh my God, it was the best ever. I've never. I'm like, well, there's your problem.
I can see where you would come to that conclusion. I think it's one of those things where, what is it? A square is not a rectangle. Square is a rectangle, but a rectangle is not a square.
Not a square.
Right? So I think it's you're like half there. I feel like if there's porn, we'll call it porn style sex. If there's porn style sex involved, of course, like probably the relationship is going to last longer than maybe it quote unquote should, because people do get very caught up in the lust, like physical side of things. The problem is when that is the driving force of a relationship and the other components are not in place. I think if you have a strong emotional, intellectual connection with somebody, if you share a similar outlook on life and share values and, you know, want to raise kids the same way, if you even want kids, right? If you're in alignment on all those things and there's trust and communication, and I can go on and on, and there's porn style sex involved, that sounds incredible. You know, I have
right.
no issues with that. Yeah. But a lot of people who have the sparks and the crazy fireworks and in the bedroom, a lot of times they're allowing that to overshadow the fact that there are other things lacking. And that's where it becomes problematic. It's not the sex itself.
And I guess I agree with you pointing out the sex itself, but that's on my end, what I see is the breakup. So clearly they weren't compatible in other areas. Otherwise they right. wouldn't be seeing me. So that, I guess that's where I draw my conclusions from.
Yeah. One of the things I do want to mention is that the older I get, the more I'm chasing intimacy over eroticism. Like eroticism for me comes from intimacy, comes from connection, comes from communication. And I think that also too, for me, is that when a woman finds things important in her life, that's passion to me. Like I want to be able to follow and see and support what she finds important and what she's passionate about, because that to me is the ultimate connective tissue in a relationship.
Now, okay, I've got seven people in mind for you, or there's someone listening who thinks that she's it for you. What body, face, like what form could that come in that you already know you're not going to be into it? Instead of asking your type, I want to know what you know is not your type. It's like an unfortunate but definite part of the process.
Fitness has to be a part of their life. You know what
I'm
saying?
He does not want obese. He's very politically correct about it, but and I say this, he used to be a 300-pound woman. And so there's a huge difference between what men are attracted to. And Jake wants someone that takes pride in their appearance, pride in their physical health, and those are what he is looking for. So if there's someone that has all the qualities but does not have the desire to take care of themselves, both body and mind, then Jake's probably not going to be interested.
What if they look fit, but they don't really do anything too active? Is that someone I can consider for you, that it looks traditionally fit?
I think I would be definitely open to that.
Okay. And on the flip side, again, have to ask, you could totally edit it out.
Yeah.
But if somebody like was very active and that was important to them, but they just naturally had like a much curvier frame, should those types of people be in the mix as well? Like, is it more a look or a lifestyle is really what I'm asking.
I mean, it's, you know, okay, here's the challenge with this. You could put up like 10 different pictures of 10 different women, right? And I could easily, immediately say, I'm physically attracted. I'm not physically attracted. Like, you know what I'm saying? So for me, and Michelle knows this, is because I overanalyze things. I'm coming up with too many options. Like, well, she said this person, is she in a gym? Is she at the post office? Is she at a coffee house? Is she like, I'm trying to like picture this. And I know it sounds like it'd be a simple question, but unfortunately you're asking me.
But this is what he does. The answer is,
I mean, I get it. He want, you know, there, maybe if we were sidebarring, it would be, I get it.
I don't want to alienate anyone either. I don't want to disrespect, obviously, but most women won't go for this, but I will date taller than me, obviously.
You will.
Yeah, I have no issue with that whatsoever. I'll be there.
So it sounds like there's a pretty broad spectrum.
Yeah.
See, okay.
I love, you say, well, why didn't you give me the answer like that so I don't waste your time? I'm like 5 minutes of this, and then she just simplifies. I love that.
No, that's great. Thank you. Jake is truly, there's not necessarily a type, but I do think there is a package, if that makes sense. Like it has to, I think the package is more important than necessarily the wrapping paper on it.
I'm sure you know, like neighborhoods in LA all have very distinct vibes to them. Your ideal woman would be defined by what LA neighborhood?
That's a good question.
Not West Hollywood and not Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. I asked about it for 2 seconds, but keep going.
Okay. I think Santa Monica would be nice. I like West Hollywood. I like Beverly Hills. I don't know what Michelle's talking about. She's gone now, so we can talk amongst ourselves. But I think that in terms of neighborhood, it's the same way. Like you couldn't necessarily pigeonhole me as a West Hollywood native either. You know what I'm saying? Like it's just.
So I'm not asking like where your ideal woman lives, but just in terms of her personality, which neighborhood sort of best describes her personality? And same question for you. What neighborhood encompasses your vibe? If I'm sure it's like a combo, right? But if you kind of had to choose one or two.
If you had to pigeonhole me, probably you would say Toluca Lake is my personality, to be fair.
Fascinating. Okay. I don't get that one a lot.
Right. It's not quite Burbank and it's not quite Hollywood, but it's somewhere. It's close enough to like the studio vibe, but it's got that sort of Mayberry appeal to my Midwest roots, if that makes sense. So I'm from St. Louis, Missouri originally, as I may have mentioned. But, you know, on the analytical level, I could see me dating a woman in Culver City, let's say. You know what I'm saying in terms of that? In terms of that
sort of. No, this all really helps. I'm sure you have tons of listeners that don't live in LA and they're like, what are they even talking about?
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
Yeah, they're very specific vibes, these places. Oh. And so it actually helps my process a lot. I think like a good way to... Yeah, you're a hybrid of several different things, but I feel like Culver and Toluca Lake, like I know the overlaps you're going for, and I think it's a good frame of reference. And so, ladies, if you're that vibe, you know, hit us up. So let's get superficial for a second, because sure. I run a blind dating service. I actually think it works better, and we can get into why. But in terms of, I do think physical attraction, you know, as we covered with the porn star sex conversation, it is really important. Where's Michelle?
We need her. You know what I'm saying? Michelle, if we're talking porn star sex, we need a lawyer.
We're talking porn, Harry.
Michelle, porn, hello. We're doing a podcast. Michelle, I love how we're doing Michelle's podcast and she can barely sit down for a second. I mean, did you just have lunch, Michelle? Are you here?
No.
We're still here. We're still here, Michelle.
We started getting into like the physical side of
we
things.
We did.
Because,
Michelle,
you're fit looking. Pescatarian, okay.
Pescatarian, does not drink alcohol.
No, I gave up drinking 11 years ago. So I don't mind being with someone who drinks, but yeah.
Are you sober or is it
no, I just
for health
it up.
Reasons?
When I was online dating, every weekend revolved around drinks. It was all about, let's grab drinks, let's do this. And I was dating like a lot online between like 2011 to 2016, so a while ago. And everything was about drinks. And I was never a big drinker, but every single weekend was drinks and shots and beers and wine. It's like all this thing. And it started to like affect my body. And the older I got, the more I needed more recovery time. So it was kind of a waste. And I started to give it up. But I also, another thing too, I have never used drugs. I don't use weed is fine. Like if anybody smokes weed, but I'm not into drugs at all. So.
Okay. All helpful to know. Mm-hmm. Do you typically go for more creative or analytically minded women?
I like somebody with a fire and a passion for what they like and what they, oh my God.
I knew I had it. That's his freshman picture from high school.
So funny. And he looks so young there too.
So I have an 11-year-old, and my 11-year-old who just finished fifth grade looks like bigger than Jake did it. Well, no, he is bigger.
I would agree.
You see what's going on here. So I tend to project younger. This is going to come in very handy for you, Jenny. I'm giving you a little bit of background on me so you can kind of see what you're stepping into here. Because you didn't know. You just thought you were joining a podcast. You had no clue you're going to have a species in your Petri dish here. So, okay, what?
She had no clue she was going to work today.
No. Here's what I look like as a 5-year-old. So, there's what a potential child would look like if my genes hold up.
For those not looking at the video, he's cutie.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, this is the last one I'll send, but you can kind of see what we're getting into there. So, there's
but so this is what kids might look like in your future.
Okay.
Did you grow up and do you currently practice any faith or religion?
I'm spiritual and I was born and raised Roman Catholic, but I have not been practicing for 30 years plus. But I am very spiritual. I do pray.
Yeah. Do you go to church at all?
I have. I mean, I don't go regularly.
Are you more likely to end up with an atheist or someone who goes to church every week?
That's a good question.
Neither.
I haven't seen your roster yet, JD, so I don't know. It depends.
You're like, I don't want to accidentally rule anyone out. But in your dream scenario, is it just someone?
To
I can't
be fair,
see being an atheist.
I could probably see myself as somebody who's more of a church going person than I could somebody who does not have any spiritual connectivity whatsoever.
So here's my thought, only because I've been down the kid road and everything else, because I've had three boys. For Jake in particular, I think it's important for him to find someone that has some kind of spiritual background, because if kids are in the mix in particular, the dichotomy between Jake being spiritual, whether it's Roman Catholic or something else, and an atheist, I don't think works real well for raising kids. And that'd be more of my concern for longevity purposes.
This is the one time when you can be on a podcast where you have JD, who's going to get you going in, and Michelle, who's going to get you going out, is a lawyer. So it's great to have this balance here. So I know, like JD, you're going to say, here's all these candidates, and Michelle's going, not so fast. This one, like, you know what I'm saying? This is a pretty cool thing, and I'm not paying for it, too.
Hopefully none of my clients end up having to go to Michelle.
Well, I'm not licensed in California, so it's okay.
There you go. So yeah, let's say a woman doesn't want children and is really well suited for you outside of religion. Do you want me or somebody listening, should someone who is atheist, agnostic, Hindu, Buddhist, Jewish, like any of those women, should they be thrown in the mix?
I to all those points, I think the latter three are probably green and the first two are probably the lesser. So if you flip that script in terms of, I think you said Hindu, Buddhist, and Jewish would probably be more applicable than atheist or agnostic, but okay. It's not like I would discount atheist or agnostic. They may discount me though. So,
well, yeah, so that, but that's for others to figure out. You, I just want to know what you are open to. So in terms of what you're open to, it sounds like someone who has some spirituality in their life. And then can we talk politics?
Yeah, please.
Okay. So what are you open to politically? Where do you lean?
Which way is left? So you guys, I am against any politician that infringes on anyone's rights. I am against taking away the woman's right to police and to protect her own body. Okay. I'm against anyone who has any sort of racist, homophobic, misogynistic attitude when it comes to that. And this is coming from a cis white male, but I don't have much tolerance when it comes to anyone who would infringe on someone's rights just to live and exist in a free way.
Okay, great. I think that's very clear. And so where would you land in terms of the women that you tend to go for and the energy that they lead with?
Somebody told me this once too, is that I don't do well with princess energy. I came from a background of strong women. I do well with women who can lead a conversation and that I can shut the F up and listen more than I do that I have to draw that out of them. I don't like to generally be the focus of a conversation. I can just sit back and admire them versus like, because I lead conversations all day, except for with Michelle, obviously you can see why.
Well, Michelle, like something that I think would help clarify, and Michelle, you'll have to tell me if this is off base, but Jake, how Elle Woods... into that, not into that. Is that princess energy?
You mean from Legally Blonde?
Yeah. Like, is that princess energy? Because I think what, to Michelle's point, somebody can have that like girly, very effeminate vibe, but yeah, still like crush it, be valedictorian of her law school. And that's obviously like, Michelle, I'm not comparing you to Elle Woods. You're very different people. But no, just no, so, understand. Yeah. But so I have clarity on like, I agree. Like, obviously, she's not real. There are a lot of real life examples.
Wait, you have Elle Woods in your roster? Oh my God, please set me up. What are you waiting
for? But like, no. somebody like that who's like ultra feminine, like the epitome of like princess energy, but also like successful and badass at work. Like, is that too extreme for you on the femininity side?
Think of like, and you know this, J.D. Borgen in Hollywood, the studio executive, right? That kind of like vibe where it's like they work hard, they're passionate about what they do, create their lifestyle around work, and then sort of take the time off and take the extended vacation and all that kind of stuff. So I think that there's something in that. That's why I mentioned Culver City. I was thinking like Sony. I was thinking like that sort of vibe in that capacity where, and also too, that kind of woman doesn't have a lot of time for bullshit, doesn't have a lot of time for games. I am so anti-game, and that's one of the things the women I've dated, they love that I do not play games. Why would I waste your time or my time? And so I think that what I try to do with my life is present as transparent as I can and not bullshit, because I don't want to waste my time, I don't want to waste their time, and I think that's really important in terms of getting that out of the way first, if that makes sense.
Life's too short.
Yeah.
And life's too short for the bullshit.
I think it's great that you're attracted to like a strong, confident, driven type of woman. I'm curious on the spectrum of femininity to like more of that typical like alpha masculine presence. Where would you land in terms of the women that you tend to go for and the energy that they lead with?
Ambition, strength, passion is something that fuels me. It's not something that I run from. It's actually a turn on for me, if that makes sense.
You're more into a power couple dynamic.
100%. 100%.
Okay.
My only thought on like the Elle Woods scenario is I don't think, this must sound silly, I don't think Jake could do that kind of like high-pitched voice. I think that would drive him up the walls.
I'm sure she was going for the archetype versus the actual.
Well, I know, but I'm also trying to, you know, add in like, a little bit more information. Just in case.
Yeah. Yes. I'm collecting data here. This is great. The woman is everything we discussed, but if she's blank, don't consider her.
Maybe I'll go back to the don't shit where you eat. If it's somebody that I work with, let's avoid them. But that's kind of a small, actually not a small pool, but you're in the same pools, actually.
Previous. So in terms of companies, because I do work with a lot of people in entertainment.
Oh, no, I have nothing like that. I mean, they're so big and so dense. I'm trying to think of a third no. I probably have more green lights than red lights, and that might be a problem. But you see, my red lights are pretty firm. I'm going to go back to my original. If they have any racism, homophobia, misogyny, like anything that spews hate or spews any sort of limitations on anyone's freedom or free rights, I have a huge problem with. That's a simple one.
Okay, one.
Number one. Number two, is someone who doesn't have a passion for something in their life. Like to me, I understand wanting to build a great life. I understand all these things, but there's got to be something that you have passion for. It can be a hobby. It can be a career. It can be people. It can be advocacy. I really admire someone who's either part of a cause, working for a cause, or something that they really care about. You know what I'm saying? Not just maybe they have a job, maybe it's really high paying, but if they don't have what won't work, I'll tell you right now, is if they have more of a passion for getting out of work than making the work that they do count.
Perfect.
And that's only two. So I need three. Oh, I would say somebody who has not fully separated themselves from their last relationship, has not gotten over their ex. I don't want any, because I do the same thing. I'm like, I will break up before I cheat. That's how I've conducted every single relationship in my life. And it has gotten to that point before. I have been cheated on, but fortunately, I didn't know till after the fact. So that's not a bad way to roll, I guess.
That's a much better than walking in on them in bed with someone else.
Did that ever happen to you?
Mm-hmm. Happened to me.
Yeah, I would take Jake's scenario for sure.
Yeah, I would too.
Tell me about your day-to-day life. Like, what's Jake up to during the week, the weekend? How do you spend your free time? Or how much of a homebody or not are you?
Michelle doesn't let me leave this session, so I basically have to just wait for guests to come in here. So what's
the... Have you tied down to a tree?
Day 712 here, JD. So you're just... I am a workaholic a bit, as you can imagine. I run a multitude of podcasts now, week to week. A lot of my day and night is basically surrounding doing the creative content. Like I'll go out to events on occasion, you know, I get invited more than I accept the invitations, but go to different, you know, gallery openings or premieres or things like that here out in Los Angeles. But a lot of time is spent researching, you know, finding guests, working with stories, building that stuff up. In terms of hobbies, I love driving to the beach. I love, you know, sort of being outdoors in that capacity, you know, like walking and hiking and things like that. And Michelle, of course, I spend a lot of time at the local coffee houses, just thinking, dreaming, doing, you know, just being existing in that way. So I'm not a foodie, but I do love to go out and have fun in that capacity. So, and I'm always up for travel too, like events and things like that.
We're going to Scotland next summer.
We're going to podcast from Scotland.
From the Highlands. Yeah, we're going to go search
awesome.
The Loch Ness Monster. We're looking for Nessie.
My God.
JD, I'm so not kidding.
Like, Jake, half thinks
I'm kidding. No, we're going to spend 6 weeks in Scotland.
We are.
Yep. So just to finish everything off in terms of your search, at least at this stage. So passionate, emotionally available, non-racist. I'm on it.
Okay, how do you do this? How the fuck did you boil this down? I mean, JD, you got to be my scriptwriter because Michelle, I waste like 3.5 hours circling the runway and she's got all the planes lined up ready to take off. You know what I'm saying?
I feel like Michelle's really good at this too, but
she is. So
ladies, is it okay if I sort of tell them where to go?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So my company, go to my company website if you're interested in dating Jake at LJ for Lauren and JD. Lauren's my business partner. LJmatchmaking.com. Just submit through the form there. Let me know it's about this episode and about wanting to meet Jake, and I will do the vetting. Or you could DM me at Matchmade in Hollywood. Typically, I'm a referral only business for this one spontaneous project. Yes. I will vet you for Jake and vice versa. And then Jake, you and I should sidebar and I'll have you fill out some intake, like cross all my T's, dot all my I's, make sure all the bases are covered in case there's, like, I didn't ask you if you're allergic to pets and all of that stuff. So I'll send that form over to you.
JD, we're going to have you return in a future date because I think that there are many things that we need to discuss. I can't believe I monopolized this whole session practically.
This actually makes me so happy. It really does.
I will happily return. The two of you are so fun to talk to.
Well, thank you. We are going to put all the links.
JD, the problem is now I'm going to be thinking about the future episode. So please don't deny us the ability to bring you back and talk about you, actually.
I will not deny you. This is truly, really, it was
a
joy.
I'm actually really excited about this. Yeah.
I got to tell you what I'm excited about the potential, but I'm also excited. JD, you've broken things down so simplistically that you remove any anxiety from my psyche because you simplify things. Like somehow you've been able to take all my rambling and sort of, I almost feel like I'm, you know, on a couch and I'm giving you my therapy. I can see why you're so good at what you do because you enter a space where people bring you a lot of chaos, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of thinking, I want this, but then you ask them the questions and they're like, well, maybe I don't, maybe I do. Shit you actually have to think about before you should really start dating. So I appreciate the work that you do and I'm anxious to see what you're able to apply to my 360.
Oh my gosh, I am too. So look out for that intake form.
So thank you so much for joining us today. It was really... you made my day. This was a ton of fun. So thank you. And thank you for everyone joining us on Love, Lust, Law today. If you want to reach out to me, you can. You can follow me on Instagram at Attorney Michelle Locke. You can also follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, TikTok. I'm also on YouTube now because we're now video for our podcast. If you want to email me directly, you can email me at hello@michellelocke.com. Just remember, Michelle's with one L, and you can thank my mother, Margot, with no T for that. Have a great one.